Welcome back to another episode of the Knowledge Base Podcast. I'm Kate, your host. Today I'm sitting down with eMoney's Madeline McAleer, Senior Financial Planning Product and Research Consultant. Madeline and her team work hard to understand what it is that you, advisors, want to see come to life in eMoney and the best way to make that happen. Madeline is a wealth of knowledge on both eMoney and financial planning topics, including our topic of choice today, estate planning. From the variety of trusts and the details around those, to modeling a will in the app, and of course, qualified charitable distributions, I tried to cover so much ground in this episode. Here's my conversation with Madeline. Please be advised that this podcast contains purely educational information and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented in this podcast are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor LLC or any of its affiliates. Hi, Madeline. Thanks so much for joining the podcast today. Before we dive into everything about estate planning, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do here at eMoney?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kate. So I have been at eMoney for almost 9 years. I started out in customer service, and I'm currently on our financial planning group team where my title says financial planning product and research consultant, but what that really means is that I'm kind of a SME when it comes to inside eMoney, and I help consult other departments on financial planning knowledge to enhance the product. I work with a lot of our product development teams, and I also focus on strategic intelligence in order just to stay abreast on industry trends and yeah, so a lot of in-depth product, eMoney product day-to-day.
That's amazing. Yeah, your team definitely plays a huge part in making everything happen and happen well here at eMoney. So I think that I know that you bring a ton of value to everything that eMoney provides advisors with. So I'm excited for advisors to hear a little bit about someone from FPG and the estate planning perspective today. So what should the advisor have entered into eMoney before diving into estate planning areas like trusts, wills, things of that nature that will just kind of help them in planning for those more advanced topics?
I started out in customer service many years ago. And when I went through training, the trainers always said, garbage in, garbage out. And it has stuck with me throughout all the years here. And it's so true. I don't think advisors, even people working in eMoney, realize even just having one field incorrectly entered in or not entered in can really affect the outcome of a plan. I actually just did for our summit, our 2025 summit, my topic was estate planning. And one of the main points of my presentation was how important it was to have all your facts up to date. And I keep saying all your facts. I guess specifically when you're doing estate planning, the owners of accounts, the beneficiaries of accounts, the contingent beneficiaries, the second beneficiaries, the account value, and then not only just the ownership of the account, meaning whether it's the client or the spouse, but if there is a trust that owns an account or a business that owns an account, it's important to enter those into the system so that when you're looking at your fact set in the fact area, there's nothing awry. Even having, you know, an account owned by a client when in real life it's really joint right of survivorship will affect the calculations because we do have those rules and calculations built in. Also, anybody pertinent to the estate plan. So if children are inheriting assets, if there's a business partner that will be part of the plan, there is an area to enter those in. And that way you're able to select those ownerships throughout the process of entering in facts. And then when it comes to the wills area, we do allow for the advisor to enter in specific bequests. So A client can upload a will to the vault so the advisor can see it. They can read that will and they can enter in bequests, like, you know, this asset goes to this person, or this trust gets fulfilled at this person's death. And having that lined out will help the estate calculation reports compute everything correctly. And then as well as trusts, there is a difference when you're entering a trust into the facts of e-money. We're kind of going off the assumption that it's already in play. It's already established, that the paperwork's written up. A lot of times, if an advisor is trying to model a trust that they're proposing to a client, they'll by accident do it in the fact area. And when that happens, you can't really compare what that trust is going to do to their plan because it's entered into the facts. So I think that's one thing I haven't said yet, is if it's already in play in real life, it's going into the fact area. If it's something that's being proposed, a trust is being proposed, or even new bequests in a will that are being proposed, that should be done in the plans area.
That's a great rule of thumb for advisors to kind of have as a takeaway. And hopefully it kind of helps make it pretty simple for them. Like, something that's going to be proposed should be kept in plans, whereas when they know it's happening, put it in facts, because I imagine there could be a lot of confusion there, and it probably just helps it to keep them organized when it comes to planning.
Yeah, and I actually just thought that just made me think of something else important, is that a lot of times when you establish a trust in the future, there are certain calculations that go on when it's established, and the system actually calculates that. We have it all built into the system already. So if it is something that's being proposed and it's being entered in the facts, we won't be able to calculate those. A lot of times there are deductions for some kind of charitable trust or something that'll bring down the estate tax. So it's very important to note.
Definitely. Is there a best kind of starting point when it comes to estate planning and e-money?
Yes. Once you feel that your facts are entered into the best of your ability, the best starting point is to actually go into our reports area. And there's a report called the Detailed Estate Calculations. And when you get there, it does look like a lot of lines, but what it shows is the flow of the estate at death. It shows the estate tax calculation as well as the transfers at death. And by looking at that report, you're kind of able to see whether or not your facts are entered in correctly and are flowing the way that you want. That way, it establishes the baseline to be able to go in and actually propose things and alternate scenarios so that they come out correctly. So I would say go to our reports area. Detailed estate calculations is one of our best fact-checking reports. I'm sure if you've called into customer service before as an advisor, you more likely than not, and it's about estate planning, the customer service rep has taken you to that report. If they haven't, this is your telltale to go to that report, because it is a great report.
I love it. I know you talked a little bit about trusts earlier. E-money supports several different types of trusts. What should our advisors know when it comes to each type of trust? And does the system have unique features for each one, or is it just kind of a general umbrella?
If it's an already established trust, it is best practice to put that in the facts. It's part of your current plan. It's already in play. If it's something that's being proposed either by the client, the spouse, or, you know, a suggestion from an estate attorney, it's best to put that in the plans area. As far as specifics for each trust, we do have, I'm going to say like 12 different trusts built into the system. They all have their own unique fields. So we have, you can enter in a charitable remainder trust. You can enter in a IGIT, an intentionally defective grantor trust. And when you click into each trust, you'll actually see that there's unique fields specific to that trust. So while some other things in the system are under like one umbrella, like an annuity entry, it's kind of a generic entry. We do with each trust have specific fields that are pertinent to that trust that make it operate the way it does. So it's best to have, if you can, get those trust documents from the client or the estate attorney. Or I know sometimes advisors, you know, have meetings with the estate attorney themselves and show them e-money and while they're entering in facts, so they make sure they get them correctly. But we do have for each trust specific fields built in, in order to be able to calculate things correctly. So it's important to get those documents.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful for advisors to know too, especially because like you said, it differs from something like annuities, e-money, where maybe it is more of just kind of a general entry format. And there are so many different types of trusts and so many different intricacies for each trust and the way that they work. And then on top of that, you have a totally unique set of clients. So I'm sure it just really differs from client to client and situation to situation. And part of that I know is the ownership. So obviously with the different forms of ownership, like tenancy in common, joint tenancy with right of survivorship, how does our application represent those various ownership types?
By default, so say you have a client and spouse in the system, by default, when you go into an account, in the ownership dropdown, there are already choices. You can make the client the owner, you can make the spouse the owner, or you can select client and spouse, joint right of survivorship, client and spouse, community property, or tenants in common. So depending on what is selected, the system knows how to compute that depending on what state is also selected in their state tax assumptions. And it'll, at death, transfer those correctly, as well as with, you know, joint right of survivorship, that ownership precedes the will. So if there's a bequest for an asset in the system to go to a child, but that asset is titled as owned by joint right of survivorship spouse, client and spouse, the system will listen to the ownership because that's how it works in real life. So the system's smart enough to know which to look to first, and to be able to calculate that correctly.
Okay, that makes sense. And that's very helpful because, as I mentioned, it's just some of the intricacies that are involved that just, I think, make it a little bit more complicated for advisors. And so knowing that our system has ways that kind of make it a little bit easier is great. What part of the application or what parts of the application really best support an advisor walking clients through complex estate planning topics? So obviously we've talked about trusts, but something like maybe a multi-generational trust or a charitable giving plan, something a little more complex there, what parts of the application can they lean on for that?
Yeah, so there's a couple different parts. There's the reports area that I touched on a little bit. That's great for fact-checking for an advisor's eyes just because it does have so many line items on it. The one specific one I mentioned, the detailed estate calculations. There are advisors that do show that to clients that they know will appreciate that report, I should say. But beyond that, there is a report that I know gets a lot of great feedback. It's called Estate Flow Charts. And part of the reason is because it does have a flow chart visual at the top that's easy to look at and understand. You're also able to compare your base plan to, say, a charitable giving plan. And the report will lay out how much money is saved in taxes because of certain charitable deductions that are going on or certain transfers that are happening. There's also a multi-generational report. It's called Multi-Generational Transfers. And then the last report that I will mention is the Estate Distribution Report, which I think gets overlooked a lot. It's actually a great report. It basically assumes that the client and spouse have passed away already, and it shows what happens with the heirs when they inherit those assets. And then it also includes the out-of-estate trusts. That's great to look at. And then alongside all that, we have our Decision Center, which over the past couple years, we have been adding to the estate functionality of that. And what I mean is, if you're a longtime user, you probably remember the Distribution Center, which was basically the Decision Center, but for estate planning. We actually moved that in the Decision Center. So, and what that just means is that there's a bunch of estate reports within Decision Center now, and they're updated, they're modernized, they're clickable, they're drillable, and they, like some of the reports, show, hey, this is how much you're saving in taxes. This is how much you're actually increasing your estate value that's transferred to heirs. And you're able to compare and contrast distributions in a very visually appealing way so that it does not overwhelm the client when you're in the meeting with them. And you're also now able to add those reports into a presentation. And soon you'll be able to display that presentation on the client site. You can do that right now with other reports in Decision Center, but we're still adding the estate reports into that presentation view on client site. But that'll just make the whole process of showing a client a complex estate plan a little bit easier, I would think.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so great that they will be able to do that and give clients that visibility, because we talk so often about really enhancing that advisor-client relationship and like what exactly helps build that between the advisor and client, and what in e-money can contribute to creating a stronger advisor-client relationship. And I think that's just one example of, you know, giving the client a little bit more visibility into everything that the advisor is seeing.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Hey there, Kate here. We love making these podcasts for all of you, our listeners. Now we want to listen to you. What do you like about the Knowledge Base podcast? What do you not like? Please send us a message. You can use the form on the Contact Us page of the podcast's website, or just send us an email to knowledgebasecontent@emoneyadvisor.com. As we enter the podcast's third year, we want your feedback now more than ever. Okay, one of our top search terms in the help menu is QCD. For qualified charitable distributions, we get a ton of questions on these, and it's something that I really want to dive into and give our advisors insight in how they work in e-money. Hopefully, this will kind of cover some of the frequently asked questions, although we do have other great resources in the help menu on this related to this term. But with that being said, while we don't typically cover a lot of the like point and click instruction on the podcast, I do want to maybe just touch on the best way to model a QCD in eMoney. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and maybe some of the things that they should know about modeling the QCD before doing so?
Yeah, of course. So yes, like you pointed out, there's no, I'm sure this is why this is one of the most searched for help topics. There's no direct technique to be able to click and say, hey, QCD, let's enter it in. But there is a way to model it. What you're able to do is there in the other expense area of the facts, you're able to create an other expense. In the other expense, there is a list of deductible types, which tell the system how to treat it if it's going to impact their tax situation at all. And so in this dropdown, what you would select is the miscellaneous above line deduction type. This treats it so that being treated as a miscellaneous above line deduction. And so it's not exactly how in real life the QCD would be miscellaneous above line deduction, but the mechanics of it in the system end up calculating and computing the same. It doesn't involve the distribution and taxes. So I'll get into that in a little bit. But basically, so in the other expense, choose the deductible type as a miscellaneous above line deduction. And then you're going to hit save. The other main part of this is in the funding tab. It does default to have this expense funded by the core cash account, but because it's a qualified charitable distribution and this is coming from an IRA, most likely from part of an RMD, you're able to choose the IRA as the funding source of the expense. So in the system's eyes, what it's doing is it's saying, oh, okay, they have this expense in for a specific amount. We know that we're going to treat it as an above line deduction. So we're going to subtract it from their income and it's going to come from their IRA. So basically it makes it a non-taxable event, which mimics how it works in real life. I would say the couple just things to be aware of when you're entering in that expense, the annual amount you can match to what their RMD would be if you're using their full RMD. It's not going to be the exact same as the RMD every year because the RMD is based off of RMD factors. And within the expense, you can only choose an index rate, but you can usually get it pretty close. And also, in the funding area, there is a little toggle that says stop funding the expense if the funding source is exhausted. And I would say it's, you know, best practice to actually choose that Because what that does is it tells the system, hey, if this IRA runs out of money, don't keep showing this expense on the reports, because it'll start pulling from the core cash account, which might pull from other accounts. So definitely toggle that on. And then also an addition, like a bonus that I think is kind of good to have and you're able to show clients is in it. So the expense mimics the QCD, but there's nowhere in that to show how much money the charity is receiving. So what you can do is add a charity in the system. You can create an other income flow that is owned by the charity. And that amount will be the same amount that you have the expense for, so the QCD for, and you can make that non-taxable. And basically what that does is it mimics the amount of money going to the charity every year. You're able to see that value or that charity increase in value on the balance sheet or any of our estate reports. So I'm not sure if that's mentioned in the help document or not, but it's kind of an extra good to have to be able to show a client, even as an advisor, to be able to see, hey, this is how much money you've accumulated in that charity from doing all these QCDs.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that understanding just even how to model, because QCDs are a little bit more complicated in the application than maybe something else where it's a pretty simple data entry. I think that having a good basis and good understanding of that for advisors is really key. With our QCDs, does the system show a comparison of, let's say, a QCD versus traditional charitable giving and the impact that those two scenarios could have on a client's plan? Almost something for them to kind of compare.
So it doesn't automatically have that. That'd be great if it did. It's a great product suggestion. But what you can do as an advisor is go in to the plans area and create one plan where the QCD is modeled, so where you have that expense and then the other income to the charity, and then create another plan where you are using the annual gifting technique and choosing a charity as the beneficiary of that. And you're able to, in Decision Center or in any of the reports, compare those two plans together side by side to see maybe one ends up with way more money saved in taxes because of the way it was treated charitably, or you're able to see how much money the charity actually got. So depending on what you're going for, if it's tax savings or you just want to be able to give as much money as you can to charity, you'll be able to see that on the reports if you compare those two plans. So you would have to make the two plans separately and then compare them. That way you're able to show it on multiple different reports, multiple different areas of the system.
Okay, got it. So still a great way to kind of show the comparison, just maybe not as direct as an advisor may think that you could.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Can users set up recurring or future QCD strategies, or is this something that needs to be manually done each year?
Yeah, great question. By doing it as an other expense, within the expense itself, it has start and stop years. So you can start it whenever you want. You can end it whenever you want. So say you add one in this year, you're going to start it 2025. You're maybe going till second death. Save that. Say you come in next year into the system, it'll still be functioning. Even though it says starting in 2025, the system knows, oh, we're in 2026 now, and it's still going to be showing as a future projection on the reports. You don't need to update it to start in 2026 or anything like that. As long as you have the starting and stopping as the time periods that you want, then you should be, you know, good to go.
Oh, great. That's awesome to know. And one more QCD question for you. How does the system model the tax benefits of QCDs compared to itemizing charitable deductions?
Yes. So this kind of comes in with how it's treated in the expense. So by clicking the deductible type as a miscellaneous above line deduction, when you're looking at the income tax report and you click into the regular federal income tax column, there is a column there for above line deductions. And that's where you'll see that QCD mimicked. And basically what it's showing is, hey, you have your total income, but hey, here is this amount of money that we're taking out from the IRA that's categorized, that is a QCD in real life, and it's being subtracted from their total income. It ends up, that's not how it technically works in real life. In the system's eyes, it mimics it exactly where the taxes would come out the same. Whereas if you're modeling a charitable deduction, you would probably do this in our gifting area. It's the planned gifts, where you're able to enter in a dollar amount. You're able to enter in the recipient as the default charity. This would show up in, depending on what charity is selected, we do have the limitation or the limits built in if it's a public charity or if it's a private charity, if it's a cash gift or if it's an appreciated asset gift. The system knows to calculate it correctly. You would see these in the below line deductions of the income tax report. And we actually kind of lay it out where it'll show, hey, this is the amount of money you gave in charitable gifts. And this is the actual charitable deduction that was calculated, which is based off of, again, whether it's cash, appreciated asset, a public or private charity. So they'll both be shown on the income tax report, just different columns.
Okay, perfect. I'm really hopeful that our advisors will leave today's episode not just knowing lots more about estate planning, but especially lots about QCDs, because I know that's a very popular question or topic for them to search upon. So once the advisor has entered all this info, they've successfully modeled these structures in eMoney, what within the application helps them present it to a client?
So there is, I will just point out real quickly, there is a gift tax report that will show the gifts given, and a charitable gift, if entered in as a planned gift going to a charity, will show up on that report. But other than that, in general, I would say there's an estate flow chart report. It also comes in a detailed flow chart report. I think I mentioned the estate one before, but the detailed one I have not mentioned. As well as the estate calculations report. But I would say majority of the time now, since we've put a lot of things into Decision Center, that's where advisors go. And because clients love it, it's easy to understand. When you're in Decision Center, there is a drop down that allows you to select what report you want to look at. You'll click onto estate planning, and there's three different reports thus far. There will be more as we build out and add things to Decision Center, but I would go into the estate flow charts report in a Decision Center, and this is where you can click into the boxes displayed, and it'll lay out in a very lovely, visually appealing format what is being inherited, who it's going to. It shows liabilities in red, if there's any liabilities at death. It shows the estate tax breakdown, how much they're going, how much is going to estate taxes, how much is going to federal estate taxes, how much is being given in charitable deductions. It also shows probate and expenses. And then at the bottom of it, it has these big boxes that say total taxes and expenses, then total to heirs. So you're able to quickly see what the difference is between how much they're paying in taxes and how much there is going to heirs. And you're able to flip on and off different plans you've created while you're still viewing that report, instead of having to go to a actual, like one of our legacy reports and click into it, add the two plans in, hit update. This will quickly change the plan, and you're able to quickly drill into the columns. And I think while I was just talking, I forgot to mention one thing a little bit ago. We do have specific state estate taxes built into the system as long as you're selecting it in the tax assumption area. So if you haven't been doing that before and you know that the state that your client lives in has death taxes or inheritance taxes, make sure you're going into that tax assumption area and selecting it so the system knows to calculate it.
Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that. I was literally just in the application yesterday working on something and came across that, like state-specific taxes in tax assumptions. So that is very helpful.
Yeah, and that's something new that we just, well, not new. I guess it's new as of, new as in two, 3 years ago. We never had it built in, but we released it, and it's been just making our estate calculations that much more accurate.
I'm sure. That's great. Okay, how does eMoney integrate with other estate planning softwares that would be helpful for advisors to know about?
This year alone, we have integrated with 3 estate forward planning softwares. They are, which is awesome. And I think for a couple years, we kind of took a pause on integrations in general, just kind of focusing on other things. And our head of integrations really ramped it up. And with all of the new adjacent softwares coming out in the past couple years, he's been able to create relationships with these softwares. And don't mean to toot eMoney's horn, but they get a lot of requests to integrate with eMoney. And that kind of just because people love, you know, eMoney, that's, you know, one of the main, obviously, financial planning softwares out there, but that then pushes us to integrate with them. And it kind of turns out better for everybody else. But the 3, I should say, that we have integrated with the past year are Luminary, which is a newer estate planning software, but it's still increasing in popularity. And then 2 that I think advisors will have heard of is Vanilla, and then Wealth.com. And yes, with this, the Wealth.com one was very highly requested. And with each one of these, say it's Wealth.com, you add Wealth.com, and what it allows you to do is single sign on to Wealth.com from eMoney. You're able to export clients from eMoney into Wealth.com and also sync information between eMoney and Wealth.com. So sometimes, and I'm not sure the intricacies of each of them, but with eMoney, we have the ability to aggregate, you know, client accounts. And if they're already aggregated in eMoney, you know, might as well make the process easier for advisors if they're going to be planning in Wealth.com for estate. It kind of cancels out a couple extra steps that an advisor would need to do just to make their planning process a lot easier.
That's really amazing. 3 just within this year. And it just goes to show, I mean, hopefully advisors listening are familiar with a lot of our integrations, but if they're not, there are so many great platforms that eMoney does integrate with that can be really helpful in especially like that comprehensive financial planning, because obviously I always say like we're not naive. We know that advisors are using other platforms as they should be, in addition to eMoney. And so I think to really create that well-rounded experience for their clients, it's great to see eMoney integrating with these other platforms.
I completely agree. I think especially, I mean, and it's just going to get even more popular moving forward where advisors are adopting topic-specific softwares to be able to use with eMoney, whereas eMoney is this financial planning comprehensive tool, and these softwares are specific to what they, like the estate planning softwares. They are in the nitty-gritty, and they're able to use that in to just enhance their whole entire financial planning experience and make it that much better.
Okay, so obviously with estate planning, really with any, I say with estate planning, but also like with tax planning and other areas too of financial planning, there are legal and regulatory changes that can occur. So how does eMoney handle the legal and regulatory changes that impact estate planning in the application?
Yes. So we do update values when they are changed. So I guess, for example, I know OBBA came out this year, but I think something that really impacted eMoney was TCJA, which was really large overhaul of the tax calculations, but as well as the estate part of that, where the estate exemption almost doubled, the annual gifting exemption doubled. There was parts of the calculations, even with trusts, that were waived. So we, as internally, we review the legal documents once they become published, work with our product teams to integrate that into the code, and then run that through QA, and then FPG, Financial Planning Group, QAs that as well. And then it's pushed out into the system. Depending on how large the overhaul is, and just with the recent tax law change, that changed the estate exemption by a couple million dollars, We're able to go in there. We're able to change it. So it's kind of, it's a multi-group effort where we have to keep aware of what's changing, when it's changing, when it's starting to change. And then we loop in different teams that go up into the back of the system and update it. And then I should say we update things in the system that we have already built in or that will affect calculations. There are some times where something's changed estate-wise that might affect how an estate attorney does estate planning, but it wouldn't affect us because it's not part of the system already. And if we do get a lot of requests for it, there have been times where we have built in new functionality, new regulatory changes because of the amount of requests we've gotten.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And I believe our team is pretty up to date on everything that's occurring and really on top of those changes, which is really helpful for advisors to know and trust and walk away with. So with all of that being said, what is one pain point with estate planning that you think advisors listening to today's episode can really just solve just by hearing our conversation? Like, what's one thing that you really want them to know that would make their estate planning e-money great? A bit of a loaded question, I know.
I think with e-money in general, it's a very robust system. I think it can look intimidating to a lot of people. And then especially with estate planning, a lot of advisors themselves don't even get into estate planning because it is this whole other world where just in general, a lot of stuff isn't written down. Like even the laws are not written down. I've talked to advisors who have told me something about like how they're planning with the client and how to model it in the system. And I'm in my head, I'm like, there's no way. But then I'll Google it and it'll be there somewhere, but it's not the Social Security Administration website. There's not that for estate planning. So I think where I'm going with all this is that I think it can be really intimidating to start trying to do estate planning in the system, especially when it comes to trust planning and tax planning. Or maybe advisors don't realize that we actually do have a lot of those calculations built into the system. And once you get familiar with them, you can model a lot. I've been on the phone with advisors before where they've actually three-wayed in their estate attorney, and the estate attorney is like, you guys are doing a really great job with the estate calculations. It's just a learning process. That just goes back to the pain point of it just looks like a lot, it feels like a lot, but there are a bunch of help documents. The reps in customer service, they are trained on estate planning. It's great to call in and talk them through anything. And they also, there's a tier two team that's able to help as well. But I think in general, don't be afraid to get into the estate planning because it is awesome. It's one of my favorite topics just because it is so convoluted in real life. But in e-money, we have it all kind of built in. And I think just one other pain point that I think might be able to be eased with our conversation is the fact that while we don't have any kind of will upload technology yet, there is still a way to enter in the wills bequests into e-money. And it might seem like it takes a lot of time, but it really doesn't with the way the wills area is built out. So as long as you have the will in front of you and you're able to parse it out and you enter it in, then the system is able to calculate everything correctly, the taxes, the money to heirs and all of that.
That's great insight. And we also have a ton of resources on wills as well. So I would encourage advisors to, especially if they're working with a coach, to ask their coach questions too. Like you said, call in, ask questions. And I think that was a great insight in the last like 40 minutes to really give advisors just like knowledge of estate planning in the application, but also insight into really how they can use it to elevate their business. So thank you so much, Madeline.
Yeah, of course. This is awesome. Thanks for having me again. And I hope someone learned something today.
That's a wrap. Thanks for listening to this episode of eMoney's Knowledge Base Podcast. We covered a lot of estate planning related topics today, but remember that if you have questions, you can always check out the help menu for lots of other resources on estate planning. I'll catch you on another episode soon.